Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, June 15th, 2018 edition of the News Gazette. And we'll begin on the front page with a piece about relocating the Burnham Mansion called Long Road Ahead. From the building's buyer, preservationist says he's up for challenge, by Lindsay Jones, Champaign. Planning and moving a 134-year-old sprawling landmark one block in one month's time isn't Chris Enck's most daunting career challenge. The Winnetka preservationist has been here before. For one, when he was tasked with hauling a home from one Chicago suburb, Wilmette, to another, Evanston. Then, more recently, I've helped with the logistical aspects of moving a house up in Wheaton. It was actually a little bit larger than the Burnham house, he said. I've seen it done successfully before, so I knew it could be done here if all the logistics lined up. In his first public comments since early May, when news broke that an unidentified, out-of-town University of Illinois alumnus might rescue the beloved home on West Church Street, Enck expressed confidence in the task ahead during a Thursday interview with the News Gazette. Per the terms of a deal he struck with Unit 4, Enck has until the middle of next month to move the mansion from its current home, 603 West Church Street, to a new one at 501 West Church Street, the now empty lot that housed the former Fleetwood building. Among the other terms of the deal with the school district, he paid $10 for the mansion, which lies in the path of the Central High School expansion. We'll receive $50,000 from Unit 4, which would have gone toward demolishing Burnham, and must finish the job by July 15, 1 month from today. Challenge accepted, Enck said Thursday. I've always been interested in historic preservation, and I think pretty much any project is possible if you think of creative solutions on how to tackle it, said Enck, who received both his bachelor's and master's degree, both in architecture, from the UI during a six-year stay on campus, 2001 through 7. I get excited about the challenge of solving complicated problems. This project presents plenty. Challenge number one. Finding an adequate space for a building he plans to convert into apartments. This part took longer than Unit 4 officials planned, but 3 days after the second of two district-imposed deadlines passed, it was announced at the tail end of Monday's school board meeting that Enck had secured a sensible site. Some board members expressed skepticism after the announcement, wondering if Enck could be trusted to respect future deadlines. But to hear Enck tell it, the project's highest hurdle has been cleared. The biggest challenge with a project like this is finding a new location that works and is nearby, he said, because if there are too many obstacles along the move route, such as overhead utility lines and trees or narrow streets, those kind of things can make a project like this not possible. Challenge number two, the budget. Asked Thursday for a cost estimate for the whole project, Enck said the budget is still in the works. We're trying to make it make sense from a financial standpoint to really show the kind of project is possible and is a viable solution to saving historic buildings when necessary versus demolition, Enck said. But everything is still up in the air regarding the budget. One cost he hopes to avoid. The $2,500 daily fine Unit 4 can levy if the move isn't finished by July 15th. Enck isn't as concerned about the costs of fixing problems inside of the home. He said he has been inside Burnham multiple times and believes the damage is minimal. There are some things that need to be updated because of the age of the building, but it's just really intact, he said. There was a little bit of damage with some leaking pipes over the cold days in winter, but we plan to update the heating and air conditioning anyway, so that won't be affected by that damage. Challenge number three, what Enck calls the coordination phase. This includes items such as filing for permits with the city, choosing a moving company, excavating the new site, and arranging for police to temporarily cordon off a section of Church Street. Enck said he considers himself lucky that this project doesn't present multiple obstacles. But there is one. He will need to deal with Ameren Illinois and Comcast about power and cable lines that could be disrupted in the move, and utility poles, if any, that would need to be relocated on the move route. Ameren Illinois hasn't been contacted about needing to move any poles or facilities related to the Burnham move, said the utility's spokeswoman, Marceline Love. Anyone seeking to move a structure needs to notify the city, state, and utilities very early in order to determine feasibility and charges, she said. Challenge number four, the main event. While the structure itself is big, the crew handling it won't be, Enck said. Based on his previous experiences, he expects between 2 and 4 people to do the actual moving, which he expects will take less than half a day. Whichever company Enck chooses as his mover will prep Burnham for its short journey. Basically, what they do is they make openings in the existing walls and they put their temporary steel beams underneath the house, and then they lift up the house using these steel beams, Enck said. Then they put wheels underneath, which allow it to move to the new site. The wheels that go underneath are all hydraulically controlled and tied to a joystick device that keeps the house level as it moves. The school district will remove the foundation once the house is moved, said Elizabeth Stegmeier, Director of Capital Projects and Planning for Unit 4. At 501 West Church Street, the lot will sit ready for the mansion to be placed. Usually, the concrete footings for the foundation are poured, and then the mover would put temporary wood, stacked kind of like a Jenga set, back and forth, stacked up within the foundation hole, Enck said. Then the house can be parked on top of that. Then the foundation walls are actually poured below the house, so it's kind of the reverse of how a house is usually built. Challenge number five, what the new Burnham becomes. Once the move is made, any outside deadline pressure is off. Restoring the building and deciding how to divvy up the space back into apartments will be a multifaceted project, Enck said. The plan is to rehab the building so that it can continue to live on and function as it had before, he said. Before the school district acquired the property, it functioned as apartments. So the goal will be to update and rehab the building, but keep the original character so that it can still be used for apartment use. And in the same section, the logistics. Many permits needed to get move underway. By Deborah Pressey, Champaign. It's going to take an array of city services to get the Burnham Mansion moved a block away from its current site on Champaign's West Church Street. Preservationist Chris Enck has met with representatives of several city government departments to discuss his plans to relocate the mansion, but has yet to apply for the permits he's going to need, city officials said Thursday. Permits are required both to move the mansion from its current site at 603 West Church Street and for the construction of footings and a foundation at the new site at 501 West Church. Planning and building safety officials said city permits can be turned around fairly quickly, given that all details are in order. But with a school district deadline of July 15th looming to get the mansion moved out of the way of a central high school expansion project, it's possible 2 mansion moves might be needed, once to a temporary storage spot and again to the permanent location, according to City Planning and Development Director Bruce Knight. For the mansion to be moved just once, Enck will need to secure the permits and get the foundation in place, and possibly a basement dug, within the upcoming 4 weeks. If the house has to be stored somewhere else temporarily, Knight said Enck has mentioned the possibility of storing it on the parking lot of the old McKinley family YMCA across the street from the new site. If that happens, Enk would also need to reapply for a second moving permit when he's ready to relocate the mansion again to the permanent site, Knight said. Some of what's involved to secure the moving permit will be Enk showing proof that he has obtained a performance bond and liability insurance to cover any injuries and or property damage to the move, according to Champaign Building Safety Supervisor Larry Happ. Enk will also need to provide the city with the route that will be taken for the move, choose a date and time for it, and give an estimate of how long the move will take, Happ said. That's so the city can plan for blocking off the streets, trimming any trees, and moving any streetlights that may be in the way, and arranging for police to be on site to direct traffic. The city will also have to review a site plan for the new location to make sure restrictions for zoning and setback are going to be met before issuing a footing and foundation permit, Happ said. Since the mansion is being moved to a triple lot, there's more than enough space to meet setback requirements, Knight said. The new location is already zoned appropriately for in-town mixed use to allow for the Burnham Mansion to continue housing apartments. In this zoning district, Knight said the restoration work could include at least as many apartments as there already are in the house. The city's time for police traffic assistance, street closings, and more won't come free to Enk, though costs in addition to the $375 moving permit fee have yet to be determined, Happ said. It all depends on the route they choose, he said. We're kind of in the dark right now because they haven't applied for it yet and given us a definite route. And next, a piece about higher education. ACT, SAT still factor into admissions at UI, but at least for now, Chinese Gaokao exam scores don't, and that's spelled Gaokao, by Ben Zigderman, Urbana. Get enough tutoring and local test prep companies all but promise to improve ACT and SAT scores. All that's required is $495 for 16 sessions at Better Prep Success, $675 for 18 hours of instruction with Kaplan, or $1,100 for 12 hours of one-on-one prep at Illini Tutoring. With prices like this and research suggesting that standardized placement exams aren't the best predictors of college success, the University of Chicago joined a growing number of colleges dropping their ACT-SAT admissions requirements. Chicago announced the policy change Thursday, along with new scholarships aimed at rural, underrepresented, and first-time students. Meanwhile, in a bid to attract more Chinese students, the University of New Hampshire announced it would be accepting the Chinese Gaokao placement exam, the first public flagship university to accept the scores. However, if the University of Illinois is planning to change its policies, it probably won't be anytime soon. No, not for the time being. We are not looking at accepting the Gaokao, said Sueha Reba, UI's Assistant Director of International Admissions. It may be a possibility in the future that we'll revisit this and assess if it's suitable for international admissions requirements. Right now, like all students applying to the UI, international students need to take the SAT or SAT, or ACT or SAT, and submit their highest scores. Rabah declined to comment on whether the UI might adopt a test optional policy and other admissions officers couldn't be reached for comment. More than 1,000 schools have dropped the requirement since Bowdoin College in Maine did in 1969, according to a tally by Fair Test, a nonprofit that advocates for test-optional admissions. Chicago, which is tied for third in this year's U.S. News College ranking, is the most elite school to drop the testing requirement. Now that the University of Chicago has broken the ice, we think it's very likely that others will follow suit, said Robert Schaefer, Public Education Director for Fair Test. The fact that a school that rejects 90% of applicants can do this and still make fair and accurate admissions decisions sends a message that other schools can follow suit. In Illinois, several colleges have already dropped the requirement, including Knox College in Galesburg, Augustana in Rock Island, and Lake Forest College north of Chicago. Knox dropped the testing requirement in 2005 after Bates College in Maine released a 20-year study on its test optional policy. The study found that the difference in graduate rates between test submitters and non-submitters was less than 0.1%, and the difference in college GPAs was 0.05. Meanwhile, the policy helped double Bates's applicant pool with increased application rates among women, people of color, international students, low-income students, rural students, students with learning disabilities, and students with talents outside the classroom, such as in athletics or art. It turns out that all the tests tell you about the same thing, which is how good kids are at test-taking, Schaefer said. He said research shows that a student's high school grade point average is a better indicator of graduation rates than standardized tests. The actual performance in the high school classroom shows not only what you know, but whether you're a good student that pays attention, turns in assignments, all kinds of things that matter, Schaefer said. Tassos Soteropoulos, the test prep director at Illini Tutoring, said SAT and ACT scores should be looked at along with GPAs. Students who don't have the resources nor the means to prepare for these exams are certainly at a disadvantage. Therefore, relying on other data, like a student's high school grades, could be a more fair way to address this issue. The trouble with relying exclusively on high school class grades is that high schools, even teachers within the same school, have dramatically different curricula and grade expectations, Soteropoulos said in an email. While a GPA is not standardized across schools, Schaefer argued that neither is the SAT or ACT. It's not a common yardstick when some parents spend thousands of dollars for the equivalent of steroids to boost your test scores, he said. In a statement, ACT defended the test. We believe, and research suggests, that ACT scores add meaningful insight and significant value above and beyond other predictors of success in the college admission decision process, spokesman Ed Colby said in an email. We believe when you are making decisions that impact students' lives, more information is always better than less information. The best predictor of college success is not high school grades nor test scores alone, but rather the combination of the two. He also questioned whether test optional policies do much to improve diversity. The literature suggests that test optional policies might result in an increase in the number of applicants, while the diversity of students who actually enroll remains largely unaffected, he said. Colby also noted that at schools with test optional policies, most still decide to submit their scores. In its policy change, Chicago continues to encourage students to take the ACT and SAT. We encourage students to take standardized tests, like the SAT and ACT, and to share your scores with us if you think they are reflective of your ability and potential, the policy states. Given that many of our peers do require testing, we anticipate that the vast majority of students will continue to take tests, and may still submit their test scores to UChicago. While highly selective, with an acceptance rate less than 10% and average ACT scores above 30, Chicago has long touted its holistic approach to admissions, placing an emphasis on its quirky essay prompts such as Find X's or Find X. And now we'll turn to the opinions page and begin with an editorial called Spiking the Spike. During recent budget talks, legislators took action to limit special payouts to retiring teachers. Those who read the fine print and are familiar with budget tricks haven't been much impressed with the state's new $38.5 billion budget for the fiscal year that begins July 1st. It's just more of what got Illinois in deep trouble to begin with. But legislative action to discourage pension spiking for retiring teachers across the state's 102 counties really is a step in the right direction. The new law, which builds upon earlier inadequate restrictions adopted in 2005, cuts the maximum pension spike down from 6% to 3%. Illinois public pensions are in desperate straits, so it makes no sense for the state to pick up the extra pension spiking costs needed to finance more generous teacher retirements. Here's the background on this self-destructive pension spiking practice. It is, of course, no secret that public pensions in Illinois are far more generous than those in the private sector. But some enterprising public employees got an idea to make their circumstances even better. They convinced their public employers to fatten their pensions by giving them outsized salary increases in their final years of employment. Pensions, like those for teachers, are calculated based on the average of the employee's last 4 years of employment, presumably their years of highest earnings. As a means of encouraging older, more experienced, and more costly teachers to retire and replace them with less expensive ones, school districts spiked retiring teachers' salaries by giving increases larger than union contracts required for non-retiring teachers. Many school districts, including Mahomet, gave increases of as much as 20% per year for multiple years to encourage the turnover. Why not? All the districts had to pay was the extra salary costs for however many years the pension spike was in place. The teachers' retirement system, meaning statewide taxpayers, was responsible for the substantially higher retirement costs. After all, 4 years of 20% increases compounded nearly doubles pension benefits. The pension spiking practice eventually prompted TRS managers to beg legislators to stop this unaffordable practice. In 2005, legislators limited the pension spike for retiring teachers to a maximum of 6%. But over the years, that maximum amount became a floor for teachers' unions to request from school districts with whom they negotiated. Not all school districts went along with this ill-advised practice. Champaign and Urbana did away with it. But many gave the 6% hikes. A few granted even larger increases and picked up the difference themselves. Now the state has put a 3% ceiling in place. Frankly, there's no reason retiring teachers should be paid more than what their union contract calls for all teachers to be paid. If passed as prologue, 3% now will become the new floor. That's obviously better, but still a bad precedent to set. There's no reason for special rules for retirees who already can collect benefits as high as 75% of their average for their four highest paid years. That practice is unwise during the best of times. During the worst, it doubles down on impending disaster. And now in the From Our Readers section, we'll begin with a piece written by Roger Frick of Urbana. It's called You Can't Trust Climate Predictions. Scurrilous accusations of distortions and fake news are commonly used by extreme climate alarmists and politicized scientists to discredit their contrarians. When civil discourse becomes mud-throwing, we get our hands dirty and lose a lot of real estate. Ignore aspersions. Please engage respectfully, focusing on questionable climate assertions of alarmists, contrarians, and scientists. Scores of papers disputing extreme climate research conclusions have been published by such climatologists as Richard Lindzen, John Christie, Chris Knappenberger, Sherwood Idso, President, Center for Study of Carbon Dioxide and Global Change, and Patrick Michaels, reviewer of the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. politically exploiting the fourth national climate assessment model predictions, alarmists and scientists decry society as responsible for global extreme climate changes. Can something as new as causes of extreme climate be settled by majority consensus among alarmists and scientists? Scientists constantly test and probe. Hypotheses are changed, improved, or discarded. Notions of settled and consensus corroborating hypotheses are antithetical to scientific inquiry. Furthermore, Hoover Institution's journal, Defining Ideas, April 2017 article, Flawed Climate Models, identified serious limitations that drastically limit predictive values of models. Predictions are skewed by temperature measurement errors, cloud simulation flaws, assessment uncertainty of the sun's energy, and other difficulties. It concluded, our current lack of understanding of Earth's climate system does not allow us to determine reliably the magnitude of climate change that will be caused by anthropogenic CO2 emissions, let alone whether this change will be for better or worse. Model predictions are best guess weather forecasts. And again, that's written by Roger Frick of Urbana. And the next piece is written by Philip Fisella of Champaign called We Can't Afford Another Tax Hike. After decades of gross mismanagement, Mike Madigan has the gall to ask Illinois residents to get behind his failed policies once again. Despite the fact that the Madigan-controlled Illinois House has passed unbalanced budgets and underfunded state worker pensions for 35 years, Madigan is asking us to support his hand-picked candidate for governor, J.B. Pritzker, in November. Pritzker and Madigan have the same plan for Illinois, passing an income tax hike on hardworking Illinois families. They'll ask you to ignore that Illinois already has one of the highest overall tax burdens in the country. They won't mention the friends, children, and neighbors we all miss, loved ones who have had to move to other states for opportunities unavailable here due to the corruption, Byzantine regulations, and high taxes that define Illinois. But wait, it gets worse. Madigan says that he doesn't have any rates in mind, while Pritzker says that the new income tax rates will be determined via negotiation with the legislature. You read that right. The two people who have been the most vocal in calling for an income tax hike won't even say how high they want your taxes to go. Not until after the election, anyway. Downstate Illinois cannot afford another tax hike. We have enough to deal with running our farms and businesses and providing for our families. It's time we stand up to Madigan and Pritzker to fight for the future of our state. And that again was written by Philip Fisella of Champaign. And in some area history, in 1918, bank robbers got away with between $2,500 and $3,000 of Liberty bonds from the Penfield Bank. They entered the vault overnight, and the robbery wasn't discovered by employees until they came to work the next morning. In 1968, the University of Illinois student Ted Lehman announced plans to operate old-fashioned railroad cars and a locomotive over a four-mile mini railroad near Monticello. In 2003, Music Fest Orlando awarded the Edison Middle School Jazz Band won its 2003 Jazz Ensemble Grand Champion Award. And we'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Friday, June 15th, 2018 edition of the News Gazette. Please stay tuned.